I first encountered the case through a recording that was never meant for public release, a late-night phone call placed in panic from a remote property where cell service was unreliable and police response time was measured not in minutes, but in miles. And what struck me immediately was not the content of the call itself, but the way it forced everyone who later touched the file to reconcile two conflicting realities, one shaped by fear and urgency, and the other by physical evidence that refused to align cleanly with what was said in those final moments. Because the caller described immediate danger, gunfire, and unknown men, while the location she described would later show signs of discharge, without any trace of injury or struggle, creating a gap between narrative and forensics that never fully closed. And as months passed and the search widened, that gap became the central question, rather than the disappearance itself. Since nothing about the scene suggested a clean explanation, and nothing about the eventual discovery of her body provided the clarity investigators hoped for, leaving behind a trail of documented facts that were internally consistent, yet emotionally incompatible. And it is within that narrow space between what was reported and what was recovered that the case of Adrian Quintal remains fixed. I came to the Quintal case after the initial search phase had already concluded, which meant my role was not to respond to a crisis in real time, but to reconstruct one through reports, evidence logs, interview transcripts, and the physical geography of a place that had been searched multiple times without result. Adrian Quintal was 39 years old at the time she went missing, a resident of Michigan who had been staying alone at a family-owned cabin in a rural area of Benzie County, a location defined by dense woods, limited lighting, and seasonal population changes that often left properties isolated for long stretches. According to verified records, Quintal had been using the cabin as a temporary residence, and there was no indication in police documentation that she was fleeing danger or attempting to disappear voluntarily. Her presence there was known to family members and acquaintances, and there were no active restraining orders, criminal charges, or documented threats against her at the time. What existed instead was a pattern of personal instability tied to substance use, which had been noted in prior interactions with family, but had not previously resulted in a missing person report. On the night she disappeared, Quintal placed a phone call shortly before midnight to a friend, and that call became the foundation for everything that followed. The contents of the call were later summarized in official statements rather than released in full, but the core elements were consistent across sources. She reported that two men were outside the cabin and that she believed she was being shot at, and she expressed immediate fear for her life. The call ended abruptly, and subsequent attempts to reach her were unsuccessful. Law enforcement responded to the cabin after being alerted, though the precise response timeline varied depending on how the call was routed and when deputies were able to reach the remote location. When officers arrived, they found the cabin intact, with no signs of forced entry, and Quintal herself was not present. What they did find were multiple bullet holes in the exterior of the structure and spent shell casings on the ground, which confirmed that at least one firearm had been discharged in the vicinity. What complicated the scene almost immediately was the absence of blood, damage consistent with an active firefight, or any indication that Quintal had been physically injured at the location. Inside the cabin, her personal belongings were largely undisturbed. Her cell phone, purse, boots, and vehicle were all accounted for, suggesting she had not left voluntarily in a prepared state. There were no drag marks, no trails leading away from the cabin, and no witness sightings in the surrounding area. Search efforts began quickly and expanded over the following days, involving local deputies, search and rescue teams, and volunteers familiar with the terrain. The area surrounding the cabin included wooded land, uneven ground, and seasonal water features that changed depending on rainfall and temperature. Initial searches focused on nearby paths, bodies of water, and structures, but they yielded no sign of Quintal. As days turned into weeks, the absence of physical evidence became as significant as the evidence that had been found. From a documentation standpoint, the case remained open and active, with investigators carefully avoiding premature conclusions. Public statements emphasized that the circumstances were unusual and that all possibilities remained under consideration. What was not stated publicly, but was clear in internal summaries, was that the physical evidence did not support a straightforward abduction or homicide at the cabin itself, even as a reported phone call continued to suggest imminent danger. As an investigative journalist reviewing the case after the fact, I was limited to what could be verified through official channels, and that meant accepting uncertainty as part of the factual record. The contradiction between reported threat and forensic absence did not invalidate either element, but it did prevent them from forming a single coherent narrative, and that tension would define every subsequent development. The phone call itself became the most scrutinized piece of evidence in the case, not because it contained clear answers, but because it framed expectations that the physical scene could not meet. While the full audio was not released publicly, law enforcement summaries consistently described Quintel as frightened and urgent, reporting that she believed she was under active threat. Those descriptions were corroborated by the recipient of the call, whose account remained consistent across interviews. What followed that call was a sequence of events defined more by absence than by action. Deputies documented the cabin scene in detail, photographing bullet holes, collecting shell casings, and conducting a methodical sweep of the interior and exterior. Ballistics analysis confirmed that rounds had struck the structure, but the origin and intent behind those shots could not be conclusively determined based on available evidence. There was no indication of a prolonged exchange of gunfire, and no matching weapons or suspects were identified. Search efforts expanded outward in concentric patterns, focusing on the most probable routes Quintal might have taken if she had fled on foot. Canine units were deployed, but scent trails were inconclusive, a result that can occur for multiple documented reasons, including environmental conditions, time elapsed, and terrain complexity. Each negative result narrowed possibilities without resolving the central question of how she left the cabin area. As weeks passed, public interest grew, fueled in part by the unsettling nature of the initial call and the lack of resolution. Media coverage emphasized the mystery, though official statements remained measured, repeatedly noting that no evidence of foul play had been confirmed. For investigators, the challenge was not a lack of data, but the difficulty of aligning disparate elements into a sequence that met evidentiary standards. The turning point came months later, when Quintal's body was discovered in a flooded area not far from the cabin, a location that had been affected by changing water levels over time. The discovery was made by family members rather than law enforcement, underscoring how easily environmental factors can obscure remains in rural settings. The condition of the body was consistent with prolonged exposure to the elements, and there were no immediate signs of trauma visible at the recovery site. A forensic examination was conducted, and its conclusions would later reshape public understanding of the case. The medical examiner determined that Quintal's cause of death was a combination of methamphetamine and diazepamine toxicity, with hypothermia listed as a contributing factor. Importantly, the manner of death was classified as accidental, a designation that reflected the absence of evidence supporting homicide or suicide under established criteria. For many observers, that ruling felt at odds with the fear expressed in the initial phone call. But within the confines of forensic standards, it was supported by toxicology results and the lack of injuries consistent with assault. The ruling did not claim that the events leading up to her death were fully understood, only that the available medical evidence did not meet the threshold for a criminal classification. From an investigative perspective, this is where the case shifted, from an active disappearance to a closed file, though not a resolved one, in the public imagination. The forensic conclusions answered some questions definitively, while leaving others permanently open, particularly regarding the origin of the gunfire and the psychological state that led Quintal to make the call she did. When the case was formally closed, the documentation reflected a careful adherence to what could be proven rather than what might be inferred. The final reports restated the known facts without embellishment, acknowledging unresolved elements while emphasizing that no evidence supported ongoing criminal activity. For families and observers, that distinction often feels inadequate, but within the framework of investigative standards, it is essential. What remains of the Quintal case is a record defined by contrast between a moment of perceived danger and an outcome determined by medical findings, between physical evidence that confirms gunfire and forensic analysis that does not attribute that gunfire to her death. Those contrasts are not reconciled in the file, because reconciliation requires evidence that does not exist. As someone who reviewed the case after its conclusion, my role was not to solve what could not be solved, but to understand how each decision was reached and documented. In that respect, the case is instructive, demonstrating how investigations must ultimately defer to verifiable facts, even when those facts do not satisfy narrative expectations. Adrian Quintal's disappearance and death remain a matter of public record, defined by dates, locations, and test results rather than speculation. The phone call, the cabin, the search, and the recovery each occupy their own place in that record, connected by time, but not by a single explanatory thread. That absence is not a failure of documentation, but a reflection of the limits of evidence. In the end, the case stands as it was closed, with no suspects identified, no charges filed, and no further investigative action warranted under the standards applied. What remains is the documented sequence of events and the acknowledgement that not every fear reported in a moment of crisis corresponds to an external threat that can be measured or prosecuted.